Atra. Herewith.
Teis. Unto you.
Kata yeshe. I shall speak. Amum. On this subject matter. Itihasam. History. Puratanam. Very old. Puranjanasya. In the matter of Puranjana. Charitam. His character. Nibodha. Try to understand. Gadatat mama. While I am speaking. The translation. In this connection, I wish to narrate an old history connected with the character of a king called Puranjana. Please try to hear me with great attention. You can repeat in this connection. I wish to narrate an old history connected with the character of a king called Puranjana. Please try to hear me with great attention. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The great sage, Narada Muni, turned toward another topic, the history of King Puranjana. This is nothing but the history of King Prachinibadishat, told in a different way. In other words, this is an allegorical presentation. The word Puranjana means one who enjoys in a body. This is clearly explained in the next few chapters. Because a person entangled in material activities wants to hear stories of material activities, Narada Muni turned to the topics of King Puranjana, who is none other than King Prachinibadishat. Narada Muni did not directly deprecate the value of performing sacrifices in which animals are sacrificed. Lord Buddha, however, directly rejected all animal sacrifice. Srila Jayadeva Goswami has stated, Nindasi yagya videraha shuti jatam. The word ashuti jatam indicates that in the Vedas, animal sacrifice is recommended. But Lord Buddha directly denied Vedic authority in order to stop animal sacrifice. Consequently, Lord Buddha is not accepted by the followers of the Vedas. Because he does not accept the authority of the Vedas, Lord Buddha is depicted as an agnostic or atheist. The great sage Narada cannot decry the authority of the Vedas, but he wanted to indicate to King Prachinibadishat that the path of karma kanda is very difficult and risky. Foolish persons accept the difficult path of karma kanda for the sake of sense enjoyment, and those who are too much attached to sense enjoyment are called mudhas, rascals. It is very difficult for a muda to understand the ultimate goal of life. In the propagation of the Krishna consciousness movement, we actually see that many people are not attracted because they are mudas, engaged in fruitive activity. It is said, Upadesho hi murkhanam, prakopaya na shantiye. If good instructions are given to a foolish rascal, he simply becomes angry and turns against the instructions instead of taking advantage of them. Because Narada Muni knew this very well, he indirectly instructed the king by giving him the history of his entire life. In order to wear a gold or diamond nose pin or earring, one has to pierce the ear or nose. Such pain endured for the sake of sense gratification is endured on the path of karmakanda, the path of fruitive activity. If one wishes to enjoy something in the future, he has to endure trouble in the present. If one wants to become a millionaire in the future and enjoy his riches, he has to work very hard at the present moment in order to accumulate money. This is called karma kandya. Those who are too attached to such a path undergo the risk anyway. Narada Muni wanted to show King Prachinibadishat how one undergoes great troubles and miseries in order to engage in fruitive activity. A person who is very much attached to material activity is called Vishayi. A Vishayi is an enjoyer of Vishaya, which means eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Narada Muni is indirectly indicating through the story of King Paranjana that eating, sleeping, mating, and defending are troublesome and risky. The words itihasam, history, and puratanam, old, indicate that although a living entity lives within the material body, the history of the living entity within the material body is very old. In this regard, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is sung, Anadikarama pole, paribhavara navajale, tiribhari na deki upai. Due to my past route of activities, I have fallen into the water of material existence, and I cannot find any way to get out of it. Every living entity is suffering in its material existence from past activities. Therefore, everyone has a very old history. Foolish material scientists have manufactured their own theories of evolution, which are simply concerned with the material body. But actually, this is not the real evolution. The real evolution is the history of the living entity who is Paranjana, living within the body. Sri Narada Muni will explain this evolutionary process or evolutionary theory in a different way for the understanding of sane persons. So, Atrate katayasyemum itihasam puratanam puranjanasya charitam anibodha gadato mabha. So, Omaganata Mirandasha Gananjana Shalakya Chakshur Meritam Yena Tasmai Shigurvaina Maha. So, when reading the Vedic literatures, there's basically two ways to understand the Vedic literatures. One is called the Mukhya, the other one is Gona. That means either direct meaning or the allegorical meaning or indirect meaning. So these are two methods of interpretation. So the sages tell us that the indirect meaning is only supposed to be accepted when the direct meaning doesn't make sense. And so that's the case here. And the example they give for this particular methodology of what's called hermeneutics, that's a fancy word for all of you, hermeneutics. It's like Herman and nudics. Any Herman's a name. Anyway, so hermeneutics means how to accept, interpret, and apply different instructions given in the Vedic literatures or any literatures or any books or any statements of any person. That's hermeneutics. There's a scriptural hermeneutics. So you can use that word when you want to impress people. You can say, you can go up to a devotee and say, what is your hermeneutical understanding of this? And they'll make believe they understand what you said, even though they didn't understand, just so they won't be embarrassed. So anyway, so hermeneutics means how do you accept things. So we, of course, when things are, let's say, obvious, we accept a direct understanding of Shastra, just like if it says Krishna is tu Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of God. And that's not just an allegorical statement. That's a direct statement. However, the Paranjana story is allegorical. And the example given is that if you say, go to so-and-so's house on the lake, you don't take the direct meaning of that because usually the house is not on the lake unless it happens to be some culture where they have houses on the lake. It's the house on the shore of the lake. So in that case, you take the indirect meaning or the interpretation of the direct meaning. So here, we're dealing with a story that's obviously allegorical. Like, Paranjana basically means, like, if you have to, let's say, translate it into English in terms of what it means every man or every woman or the living entity in the body. And the living entity lives in this body, which is the city of nine gates, Navadware Pure Dehi, Krishna says in the Gita. Of course, the Gita deals extensively with this subject matter, that it talks about nature of the enjoyer and the consciousness, the chapter, how the living entity is the, in one sense, he's the knower of this body, and Krishna is the knower of all bodies. And Krishna, I was listening to a tape that not a tape, sorry, a class. It shows my age. So I was listening to a class that Srila Prabhupada was giving. He says the difference between Krishna's knowing the body and our knowing the body, in addition to the fact that Krishna knows all bodies, is that Krishna is the owner of the body. And we're just borrowing the body. And when you're borrowing the body, or borrowing anything from anyone, you're especially careful to use that thing in the way to suit the person who owns it. Because the person who's lending it to you is lending it to you for a specific purpose. So Krishna has lent us the body. So not only is he the knower of the body, but he's the owner of the body. So anyway, so here's Paranjana. So the reason this particular allegorical presentation is made is because King Prachini Barishat would be demotivated by hearing the direct truth. Because the preacher's business is to motivate, not demotivate. Demotivate means discourage someone from executing devotional service. So the preacher has to become expert enough to present whatever aspect the person will be able to accept, and not only be accept, but be enthusiastic about. Because motivation means enthusiasm. For example, we may tell someone you're not the body, but that may not motivate someone. You're not the body, you're spirit soul. Okay, Haribo. So you have to present it in such a way, the aspects, at least in the beginning of Sambandha, so that someone will execute devotional service and come to the stage of Abhideya. So this principle of motivation is extremely important. Prabhupada refers here to Lord Buddha in his purport. And Lord Buddha motivated people by his Four Noble Truths. That's the methodology he utilized to preach to people. His Four Noble Truths were as follows. One is, this world is suffering. But not only this world is suffering, but the suffering is caused by desire, which is true. See, it's not that everything Lord Buddha taught was bad. In fact, even though Lord Buddha is depicted as an atheist, he never really preached atheistic doctrine. Although many of his followers may proclaim that he preached atheistic doctrine, there's no history of Buddha teaching atheistic doctrine. Buddha basically taught that he didn't teach any ontology. He didn't teach whether the soul existed or not. He just said the self is not this, not this, and not that. He never taught that there is no soul, although his followers will say that he did teach that. He never taught that there was no soul. Anyway, so get back to the point of the Four Noble Truths. We're suffering. And that's hard for people to accept, actually, nowadays, that we're suffering. But it's a fact. So we're suffering. The cause of suffering is attachment or desires to enjoy this material world, as we were presenting yesterday, isn't it? That's one of the causes of suffering, is our desires. What are the other two causes of suffering that I mentioned? Sinful activity, papam, and ignorance, right? Avidya, and then the desires, and then sinful activity. So, but it actually all comes from desires. Because if you desire to be Krishna conscious, then you get vidya instead of avidya. So it's all based on your desire to be Krishna conscious or not Krishna conscious. So the cause of suffering is desire or desires. And then get rid of the desires, get rid of the suffering, which is true. And then the methodology, the fourth noble truth, is the methodology for getting rid of the desires is the Eightfold Path. And the Eightfold Path involves things like, you know, right thinking, right activity, right eating, which we agree to too, isn't it? That if you think the proper way, you engage in the right activities, you speak the right way, you eat the right way, then, but what is the right way? That's it. That's That's the problem. You know, what is the right way? Of course, Buddha taught things like compassion, which is very, very important. But these qualities that Buddha preached about and encouraged people to develop are actually secondary qualities. Secondary qualities in terms of they develop automatically. Yashas, ibhakti, bhagavacha, kinshana, savaragunas, tatra, samasate, sara. Harabha bhakta, shukato, mahaguna, manorute, nasati, davatabhi. They develop automatically when one has devotion for Krishna. They're not primary qualities. Real compassion cannot be obtained unless one is Krishna conscious. Because otherwise the compassion is based upon ignorance of who you are. If you don't know who you are, if you don't know who someone else is, then what is the use of your compassion? It's like the story Prabhupada told about the boy who was compassionate to his brother who had some sort of disease, some liver disease or something like that, or cholera. And he gave his brother some pakoras. And he caused the disease to get worse. So in many cases, our compassion in this world causes people to suffer more. Like if you give someone who's starving meat, that will cause them to suffer more. That's not going to alleviate their suffering. So compassion has to be based upon Krishna consciousness. Compassion, empathy, all these other nice things, when they're simply manifested without devotion, then harava bhaktasya kato mahadguna. Manorite nasati dalbato bahi. They're actually just mental concoctions. They're just like not actually good qualities because they're not based upon real knowledge. A good quality is based upon real knowledge, not just your intention. What do they say? The road to hell is paved by good intentions. So there must be knowledge there to have a good quality. So, and then we can appreciate these secondary qualities because they're manifestations of someone's actual spiritual position. Just like yesterday, I was appreciating Lord Ram's quality of forgiveness. You all know the story of Mantura? Mantura was the servant of Kaikeyi. She was actually a nurse that brought up Bharata. Because in those days, you had nurses. I mean, nurses doesn't mean someone in a hospital, but it means that your mother has an assistant. You know, sometimes it's called a wet nurse, someone who suckles you and things like that. So she brought up Bharata and attached to Bharata, and she was the one who basically instigated the banishing of Lord Ram to the forest for 14 years. So, you know, someone sends me to the forest for 14 years, or even 14 hours, unless it happens to be Okanochi Park or something like that. Then I enjoy it. But if they said, you know, if they banish me, or let's say someone sends me to jail, I mean, accusing me of doing something that I never did, which happens sometimes. It hasn't happened to me, gone to jail, but people generally, they do, think in terms of friends and enemies, and they try to hurt people, they think that are responsible for their own pain. We blame others for our own pain. And then we want to have vengeance. You know, there's vengeance, getting even with someone. He hasn't suffered enough. Like that, we think. So anyway, she was basically the instigating cause that instigated Kaikeyi to insist that Ram be banished to the forest for 14 years. And so here, Ram is in the forest 14 years, just eating raw food for 14 years. I mean, basically, none of you could eat raw food for more than 3 hours. I mean, can go without eating for more than 3 hours. You have your breakfast, you know, after the morning program. Then you have a lunch at 1. It's just like, you can't go longer than that. You know, people even ask me sometimes, so aren't you eating? I just ate 3 hours ago. So, but Lord Ram, it's just basically raw roots. It's not that all the time they had like mangoes in the forest and everything like that. They didn't have, in those days, they didn't have airplanes that could transport mangoes from wherever the mango season was to wherever you were. And bananas. You know, he just had to eat whatever was there. And his wife was kidnapped and undergoes sleep on the ground. I mean, how many of you sleep on the ground? When I was a new devotee, you always used to sleep on the ground. But now you all have nice mattresses, like Hiranyakasipu's. So 14 years he was like that. And so it comes time for the coronation. And Lord Ram, he is very concerned with Manthara. So he says, why isn't Manthara here at the whole ceremony? You know, she's one of my mothers. And he basically goes to her. And says, calls her mother. You know, mother, you know, I want you as part of this whole ceremony, celebration. You belong in the palace. And she's feeling so remorseful that she's actually punished herself for the last 14 years. But Lord Ram has no animosity. So that's real compassion. I mean, where do we see that sort of compassion or forgiveness being manifested? Very, very rare. Very, very rare. So if one has devotion for Krishna, one has that detachment from the world. Because without detachment, you can't be compassionate. If you're attached to this body and someone sort of becomes the immediate cause, not ultimate cause, because ultimate cause is Krishna, someone becomes the immediate cause of your bodily suffering or mental suffering, then it's hard to just forgive them. Hard, it's practically impossible. You may do it externally, you know, I forgive you, but inside your heart is just saying, you know, anger with them, being angry with them. But a devotee, someone who's actually devoted to Krishna and detached from this world, can actually exhibit the real quality of this, you know, forgiveness and empathy and compassion and all these other things. So, I was actually reading something else too, written by one of my godbrothers. And he was describing actually how one becomes detached. In just a very simple sentence, and I was just so impressed with a simple sentence. He was describing the benefit of hearing the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the spiritual abode of Goloka Vrindavan. And he said one benefit, of course, is a secondary benefit. I understand the primary benefit is being attracted, love of God, and all those other nice things. But the secondary benefit is that one forgets this dark material world. Just a simple, when I heard these words, I thought, wow, that's so nice. Because it's not that one has a negative attitude towards this world, but one actually forgets it. Because one is so much absorbed in something that's so attractive with bhakti, with devotion, like that. It's interesting. Anyway, so when one forgets this dark material world, it just becomes, you know, I forgot. You know, I forgot what my name is. You know, what year were you born? You know, I don't know. 1920, whatever. So not that you actually become, get a senior moment or something like that. But it's so disinteresting for you. Not interesting for you. Someone talks about the stock market. Just like yesterday, the stock market dropped 500 points. And, you know, there's so much like this grummy kata going on, but it's so uninteresting. Just yesterday, I was talking to my mother, and all these things came out, you know, the stock market and all that. You know, and I was just thinking, and she kept saying, are you still there on the phone? Are you listening to me? I said, yeah, I'm here. She said, you're not doing anything else while you're listening to me, are you? No, of course I was. I was, you know, cooking or something like that. Fortunately, you know, they have this nice invention called an earphone where you can just put the earphone in your ear and talk on the phone and just put your phone in your pocket at the same time and just talk and do something else. And every once in a while you say, yeah, yeah, you're right. So that's nirupeksha, that complete disinterest in this world. So that occurs when one actually becomes attracted to Krishna's pastimes. Like that, just absorbed. And so, of course, in the higher stages, one becomes absorbed in the Ashtakaliya Leela of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that becomes one's motivation. So here we're talking in class about motivation, you know, what motivates you. So Kim Prachini Barishad is motivated, is going to be motivated by hearing about the problems in this material world through this allegorical story. That may not motivate us right now. Different things motivate us. Different people are motivated by different things. It's interesting. And first of all, you got varnashram. Varnashram means we basically have different varnas. So we're motivated physiologically by different things. You know, one person is motivated by, you know, study, and another person is motivated by Ishwara Baba, having some position, being temple president. That's not meant as a criticism for anybody. Another person is motivated by money. You know, someone says, oh, billions of dollars. Like last night we were talking about that. My eyes open wide, you know. Wow. Another person is motivated just by technological stuff. That's Shudra. Although Shudra activities like technological stuff is very much portrayed as something very exalted in the modern world. You know, he's a technologist. But Prabhupada said that's Shudra because you can hire a technologist. You can hire someone to do all this technological stuff. So anyway, so there's Varnashram, but there's also whatever stage we're at in our own devotional service that determines what motivates us. We've been talking a lot about that in Europe when we've been traveling about, we didn't use the word motivation so much, but really what enthuses you or what causes you to be focused in devotional service or what desires you have. Like Dhruva Maharaj, I used the example of Dhruva Maharaj. He was motivated by something very material, but it kept him focused. So I'm not suggesting that we find something material to keep us focused. I know someone who came from a different country and he's very much focused on getting a green card. And I admire that, you know, A.K. Harkur Nandana. Now, wherever he goes, that's his one point of determination. Yeah, so... And whoever he's talking to, you know, I'm not saying that he's worshiping Krishna for that motivation, but, you know, that's really, I wish I was so focused in chanting my japa as this person is in that. So we all have our different motivations in life. And Krishna doesn't discourage that so much. He says, akama, sarvakama, akama, moksha kama daradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. That one is free of material desires, full of material desires, or desirous of liberation. In other words, let me get the hell out of here. One should worship Krishna with great enthusiasm. Tivrena, forceful. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Tivra bhakti means like very like intense, focused, forceful, enthusiastic bhakti. So, in other words, we as individuals, in addition to understanding who we're preaching to, we have to adjust the preaching, but we as individuals have to understand what really motivates us in devotional service. And I'm not talking about karma kanja stuff, you know, the money motivates me, oh Krishna, do this. But, you know, you can have things that external motivate you. I mean, for example, if we're constructing a temple for Krishna, we could be very much motivated and praying to Krishna for success in constructing a temple for Krishna. Or we're preaching Krishna, we're distributing books, we'd be very motivated by that. So basically, we should figure out, and the acharyas present, not only the acharyas, but Lord Chaitanya presents different objects that motivate us, or different subjects that motivate us, in his shikshashtakam. Like you have aspects of the shikshashtakam that motivate you towards just getting the hell out of the material world. Like an ayananda tanuja kinkaram patitam mam vishame bhavam buddho. It says, this world is horrible, this verse says. Please fix me up as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. In other words, because this world is horrible, I want to get out of it, and Krishna's lotus feet are going to save me from this world. So it's not, that verse particularly doesn't motivate you by presenting pure devotional service as the motivator, but devotional service as the solution to your desire to get out of the world. So anyway, and I was also thinking about that in regard to the Guru Vashtika prayers. That, you know, the first prayer of the Guru Vashtika, that means the prayers that we chant every morning, what you all call the samsara prayers. That means the prayers for material entanglement. You say samsara prayers. Like the first prayer of the Guru Vashtika, samsara, dhavana, the whole material world is blazing fire. And the spiritual master is giving the mercy to extinguish the blazing fire of material existence. So that's like a, you know, liberation. Get me out of here. Pure devotional service is not really portrayed in this first verse, isn't it? It says the material world, samsara dhavana, like it's blazing. Bali loka, this whole world is just like blazing fire. That, anyway, I think you get the idea. And then the second verse, you know, motivates us by desire for happiness, bhavas, right? Mahaprabho Kirtana Richagita, that when the spiritual master hears the kirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he starts dancing in ecstasy. Richagita Vaditramadyan Manaso Rasena. And he feels very, very happy in his heart and in his mind. And Romancha, the hairs stand up on his body. So this is another impetus, you know, that for devotional, pure devotional service. And you go through the whole Guru Vashtika like that. And then of course, the next one is the Abhideya. The first ones are actually more sambandha, like understanding, like devotional service and motivation like that. And then there's Abhideya, the Shibigraha Dhanana Nintunana, that the spiritual master engages his disciples in temple worship. Cleansing the temple along with his disciples. And then after that, there's the prasadam one. That encourages you a lot. Chatur Vidha Shri Bhagavat Prasadam. And then after that, then you get into the higher stages of devotional service, which is Shivradhika, that the spiritual master is always engaged in hearing and chanting about the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. And then also the spiritual master, the next one, is engaging in making so many tasteful arrangements for Radha and Krishna conjugal loving exchanges. So in other words, there's different motivational statements in each and every one of those prayers that may resonate, there's a nice word, that may resonate with us. So we have to really, to be enthusiastic, to be motivated in devotional service, we have to find things that resonate with our particular, let's say, platform of devotional service, and also with our particular varna. And then we'll remain enthusiastic. Utsahan. Because Rupa Goswami states, this is very important, utsahan nishya daryat. Enthusiastic, determined, and patience. And that can only be there if you have some sankalpa, some goal. You know, why are you chanting? When you're chanting in the morning, what are you asking Krishna for? I know you're asking for engagement in devotional service, but what are you specifically asking Krishna for? What are you asking? What do you want? If you don't have that motivation or that sankalpa, then simply you'll be chanting ritualistically. What do you want? Like, what are you chanting for? You're asking Krishna for something specific. I know it's engagement in devotional service, but it's more specific than that. So think about that when you chant. And then you'll be motivated. I mean, hopefully no one has to tell us some allegorical story to get us motivated. You know, once there was a brahmachari, oh brahmachari. Or once there was a grahastha, oh grahastha. Or once there was a lady, oh lady. I knew someone like you before, many years ago. And she did this, and she made some mistakes. But you're not like that. You're not going to make those mistakes in devotional service. Anyway, hopefully we don't have to get too allegorical with the rest of you. We can be more direct. But if we have to, we'll tell some stories. Allegories. Okay. On that note, all glories to Sivangri, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Jai.